Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Helles Foundation and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, your weekly look at the Louisiana literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week I'll be talking with Rosemary O'Neill and Rory O'Neill Schmidt, the mother-daughter team whose new book is The Blood of the Baroness, about the Baroness Michaela Almonaster de Pontalba. The Blood of the Baroness, Michaela de Pontalba, Shot, Betrayed, and Unbreakable. It's the most recent book from Rosemary O'Neill and her daughter Rory O'Neill Schmidt. Rosemary has published 19 plays, founded Southern Rep Theater, the first repertory theater in New Orleans, and is a professor emerita at Loyola University, New Orleans. Rory O'Neill Schmidt is a filmmaker, photographer, and author who manages faculty development at the University of Southern California, Bovard College. The two have previously collaborated on books about Edgar Degas, Kate Chopin, and voodoo in New Orleans, as well as haunted New Orleans. So the next logical step was the Baroness de Pontalba. So welcome, Rosemary, and welcome, Rory.
Wonderful. Thanks so much for having us.
Well, thanks for being here. Now, this is something totally different for you all. Instead of a biography, it is an historical novel. So talk about the choices you made to do that.
I would just start and say we weren't planning on writing a historical novel. We were planning on writing a nonfiction, our fifth nonfiction together. So we heavily researched the story of her life, the gaps in the evidence, what was missing. We went to the archives. We climbed inside the murder room and the chateau. We interviewed everyone. And then eventually the story just became a Michaela story, and we tried to inhabit her world, and it turned into more of this of a historical fiction. But we didn't plan on it. Mom, what would you add?
I would add that we were blessed with a publisher at Pelican that was open to it. Before, we had been sort of kept in a cage of nonfiction, but they said, well, we're open to historical fiction. Once we had that, we were like sailing birds. We're going to go out because there are gaps that are not known. People pretend it's okay. But for example, how did she feel when her first child died and they wouldn't allow her to see her mother and kept her trapped in the chateau trying to get her inheritance, hoping that actually she would die on the deathbed with the child? I mean, these kind of experiences, a woman like you, Susan, you read this and you understand it, you get it, but it's not always footnoted.
One of the things that struck me about this book was that there were so many wonderful photographs and images that were so evocative and cried out for description. You dwell a bit more on the French part of her life, it seems to me.
For us, you know, we wanted to really emphasize that she was a real woman. She really walked the earth. It seems like she almost levitated because her sense of strength and survival is just unmatched. But we wanted to include places where she would have walked along Jackson Square and the French Quarter and St. Louis Cathedral, and also, you know, where she lived and the architecture she built, and even including historical photographs from her family of what she looked like. So that was important to us for readers to sort of anchor each chapter in a visual that helped tell the story.
Well, talk about Mont-l'Evêque. That's one of those incredible locations that not as many people would be familiar with.
I had a good fortune of bumping into one of the nieces to the sixth generation of the Michaela Pontalba. And she told me, along with her daughter, that the whole family had gathered at Mont-l'Evêque and created a special tour just to see all the places where Michaela had lived in Europe and, of course, in Louisiana as well. So that was fascinating to us to find out there was so many descendants of of the uncle of Michaela here in New Orleans. And I think that had to motivate us to want to write in a way the story for them.
They were here.
They're living here. I know like two right now that live. One I bumped into at Delamon last week, and she said, "Oh yeah, I'm descended from Pierre, which is the uncle of Michaela." She didn't actually know. I said, "Well, you're to the sixth generation." She said, "I am." I said, "I know one of your cousins here." So, I mean, this is extraordinary to me. So we're kind of like introducing people who really shouldn't know each other. And they both, they read the book and they were so honored and thrilled to find out these details of their family. So that was great motivation for us, I think. Rory and I have been to Paris maybe at least 10 or 15 times. Rory, ever since she was a child, I don't know, 9 years old when I got my first Fulbright. And then she fell in love with the art in Europe. So, because of her PhD in art history, I'm very honored to work with her. She can make the kind of visual connections between places that, as a PhD in drama, I just couldn't create a good story, you know?
Didn't you find writing fiction gave you a way to stretch a bit, write a different way, use different writing muscles?
Yes, because when mom and I write, sometimes I'm thinking, mom, can we say this? What evidence do we have to back this up? What can I cite? What letter? And sometimes, things are missing or gone, or sometimes you'd have to just imagine what they would say or what the scene kind of felt like. Having visited this chateau in November, we know exactly the frigid environment. And if you were hunted or locked in a cage there, you would know exactly what it feels like. So I think for me, I'm like, Mom, maybe whatever our next book should be a thriller too, because it allows us to say things that I think when you're just focused strictly on scholarship, you can't always say. You can ask a lot of questions. And so now I felt like I would be doing the research and researching, and then I'd write a scene based on what was inspired by that. So it's all built on, I think, a lot of evidence, but it's more exciting.
Well, did it make a difference in the way you worked with each other? Did you outline it, separate it in different ways, and edit?
Well, we did nonfiction. Rory was always kind of like tapping my hands with the fans, saying, "Are you sure we can say this?" Because, she works at a school that's very scholarly, and she wants to keep her job. And she said, "I don't know if we can actually say this, you know." So it opened up doors because this in historical fiction, there's really nothing you can't say. What makes it kind of breathe is the fact that we spent so many hours making it a nonfiction book, so that we already had the net, if you will, of the life.
If you're just joining us, I'm talking with Rosary O'Neill and Rory O'Neill Schmidt, the mother-daughter team behind The Blood of the Baroness, about the Baroness de Pontalba. There's so much intense drama inherent in this story. You can't go wrong, I don't think. You picked the parts that mattered the most and went with that.
Well, the life itself is explosive. I mean, it's really hard to believe the events, don't you think, Rory?
I think so too. And I think since Mom, you and I write from different generations, we could really inhabit her character. So for me, imagining being 15 years old, I was a sophomore at Dominican High School, and that having my mother choose who I'm going to marry, and it's a cousin, like imagining what that's like. But then she meets him, and he's like this gorgeous Frenchman, the son of a baron, and they're going to move to a castle. And so we tried to kind of picture where she was at different points in her life. But then everything wasn't storybook ending. The nightmare begins. So I think that, being together and being able to try to relate to her in different ways helped us inhabit her. Wouldn't you say, Mom?
Yeah, you were really great on the scenes with the babies because you have young children. So you could really add a whole feeling to those scenes, I think, that I remember distantly with the babies.
Yeah, it's just a mom's sense of drama had really challenged me too, because it was fun to just write scenes of what may have happened based on all the information we know, because we also didn't want to bombard readers with like a million facts, a million court cases, too much stuff where they lose interest. Like we wanted to keep a very sexy love story with a complex, two complex characters in this crazy context of New Orleans and France. And so we really were trying to push that drama the whole way through and show all of the flaws, the beauty, but also the issues that people had too.
And sex and violence.
A lot of it, yeah.
Yes. I think it's physical violence and psychological trauma as well that Michaela dealt with. At one point, we thought about calling it the killing of the Baroness, but then it was, oh gosh, it's more violence towards women. We don't need that. So the blood is both about what happens to her being almost murdered by her father-in-law, but also that blood of her descendants that is both in France and in America that continues on in her story of her blood.
And that image of her hand. Oh, creepy.
And of course, Rory was very brave, and she kept a correspondence going with Pierre. What's a unique thing is that each of these big families, and I call them the castle families, they have identified an historian who is in charge of the family legacy. And so Rory was in touch with Pierre Pontalba, getting all these facts down. She kept saying, "How can we write these things? These are his relatives." And so then I said, "We're going to find every good thing about any other relative. And the only one we're going to demonize is the father. Okay, everybody can have one bad character in a family. That's going to be the bad one. We all have one bad character, you
You're
know."
one bad apple. You're, that's right.
So that was Rory's philosophy, and it seemed to have worked to a certain extent.
But you did so much research. I mean, for example, some of the funerary customs, like making the paper flowers. I found that very moving, and the tomb of just babies. That was
Think
one of the
about
most
that.
striking images I think I've ever read.
Yes. Well, we had come off of writing a ghost book, and so we were been studying, different death rituals over the years, the last 200 years. But so I kept learning new things, like making jewelry from a deceased person's hair. I thought that was interesting, or a locket. And Mom, you did a lot of research too when it came to the funeral customs. But we also knew the Baron who liked to put on a huge show. And so a funeral wouldn't have been something small and private. It would have been a big event. And then visiting the chateau, I was actually there on All Souls Day, and Pierre let me into the family tomb. And so getting and how, having the church, the same exact church that was there for 300 years, bells tolling, going into this tomb, reading the inscriptions of Les Enfants de Pontalba. And I'm reading, I'm seeing this is this. I'm kind of like, this is as close as I can get to Michaela. Like, if I lay down in the floor of this tomb, I'm as close to her as I've ever been. And it was wonderful because I got a sense of history continuing, but I got more details that you can't always pick up by Googling something, or reading something. It's like you need to actually get into, put yourself in situations that you don't dream of, but can be really illuminating.
Well, to write a book like this, to spend this much time with a character, you really have to be a little bit in love with them, to sustain this kind of energy. So, what is it that you love most about her, or admire about her?
I would say her never give upness. I would say, so the fact that she was unrelenting and she didn't succumb. The fact that she loved her family and her sons and her husband through it all, that consistency, that commitment, the fact that she knew that some of the laws in France for women were wrong, and she was had the courage to fight for her own property and her own independence. I admire the fierceness, the fact that, despite all this, she's still creating incredible architecture. And people don't always like her, but because she aims for excellence, she's villainized, So I think there were so many aspects of her that I thought, wow, this woman was just unlike any woman. If I could have the chance to meet someone like her, if I could have 10% of her strength, that would be enough for lifetimes, What do you like about her, Mom?
Well, I think women are still beat up today. They are still shot and killed, and they are still strangled. We could go on and on. But she was put in circumstances that so many of us would give up, and she did not give up. This is not an educated woman. She went to Ursuline in New Orleans, maybe to what, the eighth grade? I mean, that's all she had. True, she inherited money, but everybody kept taking it from her, and she kept like taking it back. And I just like that ability to keep taking it back, to keep taking it back. I can build the I can the can-do attitude. I could build a series of apartments in New Orleans, even though I've never built anything before in my life. Why not? Let's give it a try. You know?
We all have our dream New Orleans apartments, right? I mean.
Right.
If you're just joining us, I'm talking with Rosary O'Neill and Rory O'Neill Schmidt, the mother-daughter team behind The Blood of the Baroness, about the Baroness de Pontalba. Now, one of the things you all have done in some of these books that's been so helpful is have these wonderful appendices with expert attention to detail. Like Robbie Cangelosi's chapter in this book is so helpful. So talk a little bit about talking with him about the meaning of that architecture.
Well, I've always loved just visual art, painting, sculpture, photography, and also I've loved fashion. But with this book, I fell in love with architecture. And I started to see architecture as this functional art form with this incredible history and this incredible container of meaning and a way of, I don't know, refining aesthetics. So for me, it was just that, mom said, you say take it back. For me, I'm like always hungry for more knowledge. You know what I mean? I'm always hungry. I think I know something about New Orleans or I know something about architecture. And then I meet with someone like Robbie, who blows my mind, who's like rebuilt the Cabildo, right? And so I think that with our interviews, it was a way for us to understand a perspective better that we could thread through the novel. And if people were interested in learning more, they could go to that short interview. And for me, whenever I do research and someone quotes something, or they, I want to see the interview. I want to see not just three sentences. I want to see everything they said. So it's just a chance for us to share more information.
And tell us about the fashion expert, which I loved.
Yes, Hope Hanafin is amazing. She's Emmy nominated costume designer, lives in Los Angeles, and we've interviewed her for three books, and she just brings a perspective that is so illuminating because, something about fashion and women's fashion is always attached to societal rules and power dynamics. And this can be seen in the corset, this can be seen in the cage crinoline, this can be seen in the gloves, this can be seen in you can't dress yourself, you can't bend down. And there's so many aspects, and even comparing French and British and Americans, when ladies would take off their gloves, said something about their culture. So they're always having to follow these rules. Even if Michaela was home, alone with, she can't just walk around in yoga pants or a slip. They have a full armor they're putting on, and it affects how they stand, it affects how they sit, it affects if they drop something, if they could pick it up themselves. I mean, just imagining moving through this world in this kind of costume can, if for me, if I was playing the role, it would affect physically what I could do, and then I'd have to think around it,
And just the divided skirts for ease of movement around a building when you want to look at your progress.
Yes, and reading that, after she was shot and she ended up building the Hotel de Pontalba, which is the residency of the American ambassador in Paris. She hired Napoleon's tombs architect, the best. She's in New Orleans, and there's reports of her in the newspaper climbing ladders in pantaloons. And I asked Hope, the fashion historian, I said, were pants around then? When exactly did they come around, or even, and it wasn't for another 50 years or something, where, so the she said she most likely had these made, or they were men's pants. And she just said, functionally, if she was going to climb up to the second story of these buildings and kind of critique what the workers were doing, she had to dress the part. And it's unheard of. So it's very exciting to see.
I thought that was a great, great discovery. People feel kind of proprietary about her, don't you think? I mean, everybody has their own little perception of her. Do you feel that she was?
I don't think people have. No, we haven't bumped into it more for Kate Chopin, strangely. People had definite ideas about what she might have been like where she
They
lived
don't
and
know
known
her as
her.
well.
We haven't bumped into any heads on the Baroness. I don't th that I can recall, because all of her relatives knew nothing about her, really.
That's amazing.
I think that what we've found is people, she's resilience. That word kept coming up in New Orleans at our signings. That's what people admire about her and her strength. The fact that she was a survivor, I think, gives people a lot of hope. But I think in New Orleans, what we found is people want more information about her. So they just want to know, they know the name, they know the buildings, but they want to know more of who she is. And in France, outside of the embassy, she's not known. P French people don't know the name Pontalba. They don't know Michaela's story. We're hoping to change that, right, Mom?
Yes, that's our
We're hoping
goal.
people will know more about her.
Doubt and advocate.
And it's fine to form opinions, That's totally fine. It's everyone's prerogative. But I'm thinking about who she was and what she accomplished and what she had to deal with,
It's astonishing. It is astonishing. And I just enjoyed this so much. It was fun to look at, fun to read. You all just did her justice. So
Oh, thank
who's
you.
next?
Yes, I think so too. Sometimes people go through trauma and they survive, and that can change the rest of their lives, and they can't find safety, or they want to just stay in one place. And what was interesting about Michaela is not only does she survive, but at a time when mutilation, she had bullet holes still in her chest, and she had to wear gloves with fake fingers. She's out there climbing a ladder in pantaloons. I mean, women were hidden, with any kind of deformity or mutilation. That's what they said. And so I think that that's pretty incredible that she would persevere. She lived through the Prussian Franco-Prussian War in Paris. I mean, she would just keep going. And I was like, that's amazing.
Unlike Degas, let's say, and Kate Chopin, that have a body of work. Her body of work really was the architecture in New Orleans and her personal life. That was it, So we are it in terms of her legacy physically. Right, Rory? Is there something else she did in art or architecture or painting? Not really, huh? She wrote a few
The
books.
Hotel de Pontalba, yeah, I think she built up her, she was an entrepreneur. She built up her family's wealth too. So the chateau is still in the family's name centuries later.
So maybe that.
But architecture was her triumph.
Incredible triumph. So, all right. So, what are you two taking on next? I'm curious to know.
Oh, we're already in the middle of something else coming up right
I know
now.
it's due in how 18 days, Mom. I gotta finish this next
Deadline. I'm not seeing anybody. I'm just seeing you today, Susan, and hiding out. So the next book is.
next book is Anne Rice's New Orleans. And so, yes, we've been asked by our publisher, Arcata Publishing. They had great success with Stephen King's Maine. So they asked us to write Anne Rice's New Orleans. So that has been another phenomenal symbol of New Orleans, So it's been an honor writing about the places and the people that Anne Rice has touched in New Orleans. And then also a book about Madame X and John Singer Sargent, which I think, Mom, maybe we'll turn that one into historical fiction, maybe a
If we
thriller. Who
can get,
knows?
the publisher to agree, they like nonfiction because for some reason that's the biggest seller. I don't know. After romance books, nonfiction is kind of like the big area.
So we'll see.
We'll see.
Anne Rice's New Orleans will be fun to write. That will be
We'll have fun with
all the time you have left to work on it.
that. We've been working on this
Yes.
all along,
This was just really a lot of fun to read, so I was very grateful to have it. So thank you. We've been talking with Rosary O'Neill and Rory O'Neill Schmidt about their new book, The Blood of the Baroness, about the Baroness de Pontalba. Rosary, Rory, thank you so much.
Thank you, Susan. Thank you.
Thank you, Sue. It's an honor to be here with you.
Sometimes just a sentence can inspire a book song as the songwriter applies it to her own life. Bare Bones by Madeleine Peyrou from her 2009 album of the same name was partially inspired by Buddhist writer Pema Chodron's When things fall apart, hard advice for difficult times, when children ask the age-old question, why can't we get down to the bare bones?
I remember what my daddy taught me about how warm whiskey is in a cold ditch. One more thing about good and evil, you can't tell which is which. Well, if the rest is lost to history, or maybe wasted on a fool like me, I've got these bare bones. He'd left me something after all.
Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. The Community Book Center hosts Libre Bingo, based on Sky Jackson's book Libre, the One Book, One New Orleans selection, Friday, June 26th from 5:30 to 7 p.m. Jenna Kleinpeter will discuss her new book, A Psalm a Day Keeps the Devil Away, at 6 p.m. Tuesday, June 30th at the Gretna Library, 101 Willow Drive, Gretna.
Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Hellis Foundation, the Jefferson Parish Public Library, and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in The Reading Life do not necessarily represent those of the National Endowment for the Humanities. The theme song for The Reading Life is by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by George Ingmeyer and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at WWNO.org. And you can email us at thereadinglife@WWNO.org.